What happens when an entire society loses the ability to understand itself? Russia's post-Soviet journey reveals a chilling answer. Through the lives of four Russians born in the 1980s, we witness a nation that briefly tasted freedom, only to watch it slip away, not through dramatic revolution, but through the quiet dismantling of the very tools needed to comprehend what was happening. This isn't just Russia's story. It's a warning about how democracies die when citizens can't name what they're losing. As authoritarian currents surge globally, understanding Russia's regression from hopeful democracy to Putin's iron grip becomes essential. The tragedy lies not just in what Russia lost, but in how systematically it was made unable to recognize the loss. The Soviet regime systematically destroyed sociology, psychology, and philosophy, disciplines that help societies understand themselves. While nurturing physics and chemistry for the arms race, it purged the humanities through deportations, imprisonments, and executions, beginning with the 1922 philosophership. Marina Arutyunyan entered Moscow State University in the 1970s, hoping to study the human psyche. Instead, she found propaganda. Soviet psychology rejected inner conflict as impossible. Citizens were shaped entirely by society, with deviations classified only as criminality or mental illness. In restricted library collections, she discovered fortochkas, tiny windows where Freud's case studies revealed humans as complex, reflective creatures prone to mistakes. Sociologist Lev Gutkoff twice failed university entrance exams for insufficient critical thinking, meaning insufficient party loyalty. He discovered Yuri Lavada's sociology lectures, a discipline Lenin had effectively banished. When Lavada's books were condemned, his entire department was purged. Yet his team continued meeting secretly for 25 years, studying forbidden Western sociology, an underground resistance against the regime's assault on Russian society's ability to understand itself. In 1987, Lavada reassembled his sociology team, expecting Homo Sovieticus, the totalitarian personality shaped by Soviet rule, to be dying out. This type was characterized by state paternalism, hierarchical egalitarianism, and Orwellian doublethink, maintaining contradictory beliefs simultaneously. Initial surveys surprised them. Only 5.6% looked to Marx and Lenin for answers. Half relied on common sense. Homo Sovieticus wasn't indoctrinated, but engaged in constant negotiation with the state through pretense and complicity. Yet Lavada's optimism proved premature. Mid-1990s studies revealed the type persisted among the young, who defined themselves against Europeans as open, simple, and patient, essentially a hollowed-out identity, valuing emptiness and tolerance for violence. By 1999, Soviet nostalgia had strengthened. 58% wished to return to pre-1985 conditions, and 26% viewed Stalin positively. Russians simultaneously believed they had become fundamentally different from Westerners, yet would eventually follow the path of civilized countries, classic doublethink, suggesting the totalitarian mindset had merely adapted rather than disappeared. The August 1991 coup seemed democracy's triumph. When hardliners seized power, Boris Yeltsin stood atop a tank declaring resistance. After 3 days, the coup collapsed. On December 24th, the Soviet Union ceased to exist. By September 1993, Russia's political crisis reached breaking point. Yeltsin dissolved Congress. Congress appointed a rival president. Opposition forces barricaded themselves in the White House. The standoff exposed Russia's constitutional vacuum. Citizens still carried Soviet passports and used Soviet currency, with no clarity about governance. After 2 weeks, armed supporters stormed Moscow's mayoralty and television center. On October 4, tanks fired on the White House. Final toll, 146 dead, over 1,000 injured. The execution of the White House marked the first time since Soviet collapse that Yeltsin had firm control, based on force, not law. The failure to establish genuine democratic institutions left Russia vulnerable. For those seeking to be un-Soviet, embracing Western positions became paramount. Libertarianism, gay rights, free markets. Yet these identities remained shallow, lacking institutional foundations. By the late 1990s, parliamentary elections featured competing parties but lacked substantive differences. Russians weren't choosing leaders, but reaching for belonging lost with Soviet collapse. On December 31, 1999, Yeltsin resigned, declaring Russia needed a strong man who deserves to be president. Putin's approval ratings rocketed from 31% to 80% between August and November 1999, a vertical line sociologists had never witnessed. The catalyst? Apartment bombings killing 293 people, justifying a new Chechnya offensive. Putin's crude promise to rub out terrorists in the outhouse resonated with Russians craving decisive leadership. After the 2004 Beslan school siege, Putin implemented political reforms as protection against external threats. The Kremlin's preventive counter-revolution mobilized the public sphere while crushing dissent. Former Politburo member Alexander Yakovlev revealed before his 2005 death, "We used to pretend that we were in charge, but it was the Cheka, the KGB, who were always really in command." Putin increasingly embraced conservative ideology for power maintenance. His 2006 address declared depopulation Russia's most pressing problem, instituting maternal capital payments. The American World Congress of Families found its spiritual center at Moscow State University, with Russians becoming senior partners backed by government and Orthodox Church. By 2007, Putin openly challenged NATO expansion, claiming Western betrayal. When Estonia moved a Soviet memorial in April 2007, cyber attacks paralyzed government websites, demonstrating Russia's unconventional warfare capabilities. Russia annexed Crimea in March 2014 after Ukraine's Euromaidan revolution. Putin's address framed it as historical justice, calling Crimea the cradle of Russian civilization and Russians one of the largest divided nations in the world, echoing Hitler's 1938 Sudetenland speech, where moral duty superseded international law. Gutkov recognized Crimea had become Russia's ideology, with 88% supporting annexation. Guten channeled nationalist philosopher Alexander Dugin's prophecy that Ukraine would split. By April, protesters in Donetsk and Luhansk declared a People's Republic, igniting war. Western sanctions prompted counter-sanctions, banning food imports, prices jumped 10%, while selection plummeted. Gutkov tracked a startling contradiction. Putin's approval soared while consumer confidence crashed, defying economic logic, but following totalitarian patterns where scarcity serves regime survival. Psychologist Marina Arutunyan documented Russia's evolution into a society engineered for chronic anxiety. Arbitrary law enforcement became psychological control, exemplified by Moscow's overnight demolition of 97 buildings in 2016, displacing hundreds without warning. Television maintained anxiety through orchestrated debates and sensationalized dangers. This relentless threat bombardment left two options: passive withdrawal or submission to collective identity. Many escaped personal anxiety by embracing nationalist narratives, celebrating Crimea while accepting a paranoid worldview of Russia standing alone against hostile powers. Post-Soviet Russia glimpsed freedom but lacked the tools to sustain it. Without social sciences or collective self-reflection, it remained trapped in totalitarian patterns. Hungarian sociologist Balint Magyar coined post-communist mafia state, a system centered around a patriarch who disposes of positions, wealth, statuses, persons. Gutkov expanded Levada's theories. Tension builds between authority and society until the regime responds with force, arrests, or war, simplifying society to us, them, and our leader. This abortive modernization recurred throughout Soviet history. His conclusion, Russian society remained essentially unchanged for a century. In October 2015, Putin told international experts that peace was a fragile state of equilibrium, portraying the Cold War as a golden era maintained by nuclear deterrence. Young Russians born in the 1980s gradually realized they were living in the same Russia their parents and grandparents had known. Russia's tragedy reveals a stark lesson. Freedom requires more than the absence of tyranny. It demands the intellectual infrastructure to understand ourselves and how power operates. When a nation loses its social scientists and philosophers, it loses the capacity to recognize democracy slipping away. In our moment of global democratic backsliding, Russia asks, do we still possess the language to name what we're losing?